Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, all cheaters. Welcome to the Always Cheating Podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
Can't complain, Josh. Can't complain. Can you complain?
Well, I was, and I shouldn't have. That's really where I am. I mean, I must be like the least sympathetic person in fantasy. I know it. Like, this is like, it's like become my brand. You know, it's like guy who does incredibly well and just like never stops complaining. It's like, who would like that person? You know, I'm aware of it. I feel like there's
like an Onion headline way into this with you, like Area Man's fantasy team is never good enough.
I know. It's true. I mean, it's ridiculous. And we've said this before in the podcast, you know, the make fantasy fun again sort of mantra of the podcast is an aspirational mantra in some ways, right? It is an approach to fantasy that both of us really want to aspire to and don't always succeed. And this is a weekend where I didn't succeed because I wildcarded. I put up 71 points. I had a green arrow. I'm 25,000 in the world. And I spent the entire weekend basically mad at myself for all the choices I didn't make. And it was like I just couldn't be happy with what was there. And it was just kind of I sort of recognized it this afternoon where I was like, Josh, what are you doing? You know, things went pretty well. Right.
So I want to get into, obviously, we want to talk about where you landed with the wildcard team and the players that you have and how they did this week. But what is it about a fresh new wildcard team? It's especially difficult to watch your wildcard team because, is it because of all of the players that you could have had? Because you had some players you brought in on wildcard just simply didn't work out in that they either didn't play or they didn't score.
Right.
But I think your grievances are more with the players that in hindsight you're like, I should have had them. And hindsight is just, it's a whole other fantasy game that we play. We all have our quote real fantasy teams in our heads that, you know, well, that's the player, you know I should have. It's just through unfortunate events, I don't have Rüdiger
Didn't quite work out exactly. Yeah. So, I think it's a little bit like a wild card is a little bit like game week one, right? Where practically everybody in game week one has, they put a team out there and then just because the game launches usually a month or two before the season starts, practically everybody who does well that opening weekend, you had in your team at some point, right? You can barely get a goal or a clean sheet without that player being in your squad at one point. So there's a little bit of regret there, but you kind of know, you can only pick 15 players, right? And you can only start 11. And so this is going to happen sometimes. But I think in a wild card, especially early on, you have sort of the whole, it's a little bit like game week one where you can pick anybody in the game. And then combined with a probably okay team that you just left behind too.
Right. So there's an added layer there.
Yeah, exactly. Like Ivan Toney going out for 12 off a wild card is one of those things. Like that was fine because there was really no time in my wild card where he was in my squad. And so I was kind of like, that was like a whatever.
Yeah, there are definite decisions that you make, whether you're in wild card or whether it's just a free transfer where you're like, I'm not mad, Tony, because no one can argue that my logic in getting rid of you wasn't 100% bulletproof.
Exactly. The argument was good. You know, the idea was sound. So, I just think, this is one of the reasons why a lot of experienced managers don't like to wildcard early because they don't feel like they have a good enough sense of what they want their squad to look like, right? They don't know who they want to have yet. And I think that is a problem that I fell into a little bit a couple of days leading up to the wildcard. To be very clear, I have no regrets about the wildcard because my team without a wildcard would have been considerably worse, even with Tony in that and probably Benrahma. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the reasons, you know, there's a question here from James Holland. He says, has the weekend finally people finally made people realize just how important squad depth is. And, you know, when I was talking on last week's pod and then on the Patreon pod about the wild card, it was focused on Ronaldo, all the players that I wanted. But the underrated part of, or the thing I maybe didn't talk enough about the wild card, was that I wanted a wild card because I had no bench. Like, I had absolutely no bench depth. I had two non-starting defenders. And I mean, I guess Tsimikas did ultimately start, so I guess I would have gotten five from him. But, you know, at the time, it felt like I had two non-starting defenders, and then Brownhill, who might as well not be a starter too, right? Like,
I would say on Brownhill's behalf, he created at least three genuine goal-scoring opportunities for Burnley against Arsenal. I mean, you know, ultimately Brownhill is not what you want. He ain't it, but sure. Let's a slow clap for Brownhill's sturdy effort in game week five.
That's fair. I am still, you know, I think I'm still blaming him unfairly for game week four when I brought in an injured Dominic Calvert-Lewin, and then Brownhill had to sub in for him, and he played 90 minutes and picked up a yellow card, and so I think I was a little soured on all. If I was on the fence at all about wildcarding, actually, I think I'd already wildcarded by the time that Monday was played, but it further validated the decision to do it. Something, so I, you know, short of the bench, and that worked out really well because I ended up bringing in Ben White and Livermento, who both came in for James, Reece James. And, you know, kind of bizarrely, Brandon, it was a year ago this game week, I brought in Reece James on a transfer, and he also didn't play in that match.
Some memory you have about Reece James.
Well, you know, you remember when you bring in a Reece James and they don't start. Maybe it was game week three. Whatever. It doesn't matter. So I brought in White and Livermento. So short up those spots, and they ended up bringing in 12 points for me. I went Sar, and that was kind of he was just like a data favorite. And he's always at the top of all these data charts. They have good fixtures, and he's super cheap. And so he just kind of, everything in my team clicked a little more when I had Sar in. And I brought in Jota, which we're going to talk about him later. The theme of this week's podcast is buy, sell, hold, right? So which players do we hold on to? Which players do we want to look to buy? And which players are we just ready to totally get rid of?
Sure.
Looking at you, Luke Shaw, right? And Jota we'll talk about more as well. So Sar and then Salah and then I brought in Ronaldo and Patrick Bamford too. So, you know, Bamford's one of those players. He only picks up 5 points. At the time, it feels a little disappointing because he played that whole second half, and the first half of that match was so loose and open, but 5 points is 5 points. And so, in the end it was, I finished on 71 points, and I'm at 25K in the world. So, it really did work out in the end. I feel validated in playing the wild card.
Well, and my week was a strange one. I kind of just was going through this circle of FPL decision hell, and I couldn't figure out what to do. The ideas that I had with my squad, with Antonio being out, was probably I was determined to keep Antonio for Leeds in game week six. So then
a good decision. Now
people on the chopping block were Benrahma, Tony, and Soufal. And it was one of it was for me the logic of, well, there is still every likelihood that Benrahma and Tony could come through. And I feel like that's an easy logic to apply to attacking players. And I was less sure of Soufal. So I zero, and of course it turned out to be, wow, that was incredibly enlightened of me, because both of them
22
came
22 points combined, right?
Yeah. So that was kind of like a striker who hits the ball. Their technique was sound, striking the ball into the ground, but it like barely goes into the net for a goal. Despite my best efforts, I scored a goal there. So my sights got set on Soufal, and there were three teams that I thought to target with a transfer: Wolves. And I just ultimately, and I don't want to be Captain Hindsight here, I just wasn't fully a believer of Wolves. Then you had City and Chelsea, and it is classic FPL brain rot, where I looked at game week six and I was like, I don't know what to make of this Chelsea Man City fixture in six. So I'm choosing to swerve both of these defenses, as good as that.
Because you were talking about Soufal to Rudiger, I think, on the, not to like, you know, not to bring that up a painful memory probably now, but on last week's Patreon pod, right? That was a movie you were really strongly considering.
Yeah, sure. But then yes, precisely. And I think ultimately it was either going to be Rudiger or Reece James that I would have brought in for Soufal. But then I just looked at that Manchester United fixture and I thought, you know what? West Ham home. Let's do this. West Ham are probably better than we're giving them credit for, even without Antonio. And I did think West Ham played as well as they could have against a pretty informed Manchester United squad. And just that Rudiger goal going in there in the dying minutes of Spurs Chelsea was a dagger. But for me to get away with this non-decision making, and as I've said many times, Josh, my goal coming into this season was to not sit on my hands, to not be passive, to be active.
Yeah.
But I feel like me still with my wild card, I still feel like the FPL ground is shifting under my feet, and I just didn't have the confidence to make a particular decision, and I got away with it, and I came out with 64 points with Salah captained, and got a green arrow of about 10K, taking me up to 77K overall. So I am really happy with how game week 5 went. I do feel like I got away with it, and now I have 2 free transfers. Yep. To ease my anxiety going into game week 6.
Yeah, and I mean that now makes 3 green arrows and 4 for you. It looks like too. So that's I mean, again, just not to like bring this home every single week, but it's just it's great. Like I think this is now the second week in a row where you'll be top inside the top 100K, which both of us are right now, which is a nice place to be for our moods going into the podcast.
The cheaters, top of the world, baby.
So before we get into the buy, sell, hold podcast, I just want to note next week's pod is going to be a little bit strange. Me and Brandon are going with some of our buddies on kind of our first COVID post, whatever. I guess we're not really post COVID, whatever. We're going on a trip. We're going out to the American Southwest. We're going to be there through Sunday. We're planning to watch the matches there, but I don't think we're going to be able to record a regular pod just because of the timing and when we come back, you know, fly back and all that stuff. So I think we're going to try to do a couple like sort of FPL travel logs next week. So a little strange, perhaps. Maybe you'll enjoy it. Maybe you'll hate it. I don't know. But we'll be back with regular pods the week after that. So I just wanted to note that in advance.
We are going to be on a different mental plane of existence to kind of like coincide with the beautiful like scenic vistas of the U.S. Southwest. So I think it's going to be fun, and I think our listeners are going to enjoy what we're going to throw at them.
I think so too. We should record in the white sand desert or something like that.
Shirtless. Right.
Shirtless. Of course. I'm planning to be shirtless the whole trip. All right. So always cheating Super League. Quick look at the top 10. In 10th, Nathan Scott. In 9th, Richard Bambrick. In 8th, Naomi Nishimura. In 7th, Abdulli Cham. In 6th is Ruha Shane Keegan. In 5th is Andrew Ferguson. In 4th, Paul Jacobs. And 3rd is Mohamed Diz. It's moving on up, Brandon. He was in he was lower last week.
He's gonna be dizzy for how high his rank is this week.
Yeah, it's very clever. And in 2nd is Ryan Quinn. And in 1st is, we have a new player in 1st place, Brandon. That's Nathan Carr is now in 1st. And so Nathan Carr and Ryan Quinn are both in the top 25 in the world. So
incredible.
It's pretty darn impressive.
Fantastic. And I encourage everyone listening, if you're not already in the Always Cheating Super League, it is the Super League of leagues. Just go to our website, alwayscheating.com, for the league code. And it's on all of our social media channels. One last place for us to instruct you to visit. If you like what you hear every week and you want to say thanks to me and Josh, visit us at patreon.com/alwayscheating, where you can get more FPL content in return. Josh and I do an extra ad-free podcast each week. We are doing our Dean's List Manager of the Month Award. That's a brand new Always Cheating t-shirt to the manager with the top score each month. We've also got our Slack chat, week in review newsletter from Mini League Mate. And every Volkswagen and producer tier patron gets our Make Fantasy Fun Again t-shirt. Josh, give a big shout out to all of our new patrons this week. We've got quite a few here, I see.
I know. Yeah, I mixed up a little bit with the way I listed them here. But thank you to our newest patrons, Matt Thompson, Ruben Ravendahl, Mwenda Mayumba, Alex Cruden, B. Blair, Engelbert Aaron Christensen, Dan, Henry Mode, Otter Sigjornsson. I'm really happy, Brandon, about the Northern European representation we're seeing in this week's Patreon list. Andrew Dodd, but I do feel bad that I butcher everybody's name. Andrew Dodd.
Little caveat there.
Yeah. Tom Ryweller, David Gregory, Joe B., Owen, and Luca Krilich. So thank you so much to everybody who was new or current Patreon supporter. And I thought the Slack was incredibly active over the last week or so. I think everybody's really in wildcard mode. I think everybody's just really engaged this year. And I know just watching the matches, I'm having a lot more fun too. I think part of like the way I was like sort of stressing out this week was just because I was so engaged. You know, yeah. I just feel very like locked in on this season. I'm really enjoying myself.
The matches are fun. There are tons of goals. This weekend was a little peculiar. It did stand out about a lot of dicey officiating, which soured it for some managers who are either relying on a Ronaldo pen or a Manchester City clean sheet wipeout. I mean, the strange call that stands out the most to me is the rescinding of the Kyle Walker red card and penalty. You cannot comprehend how that was not a penalty.
I thought that was weird. He sat on, was it Adam Armstrong? He sat on him. He tackled him and sat on him. That was strange.
Yeah. I mean, the VAR booth should do a re-rescind just because Kyle Walker basically started laughing when they rescinded it. He was like, you can't be serious. Like, I totally wiped that dude out.
It was just a strange thing. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. That's for our other.
It's in the past.
Yeah, exactly. You know what's great though? And another thing that I don't even want to knock on wood here, but we have like almost not been talking about VAR at all, which I think is a nice, very nice. I mean, I guess that was a VAR red card review, but I mean, I think the way it's been implemented so far has been a lot more seamless and not as much of a pain.
Yeah, less time consuming for sure. All right, and speaking of less time consuming, let's jump into a break, Josh, and come back and get into our buy, sell, hold chat.
Sounds good. All right, Ben, we're back. Buy, sell, hold. Longtime listeners of the podcast will be familiar with this topic. We've done. I feel like we do one or two of these every year. It's always kind of a fun podcast. It's always around this time. You know, we kind of do one around this time, and then usually one in the second half of the season. And it's often when there are certain players. In some cases, it's interesting because with Ronaldo and Lukaku, I almost want to talk about buy, sell, hold, rebuy, resell. You know, like how many times you can buy, sell, and hold these players.
Layaway, perhaps?
Yeah, but I think we should put them on layaway, exactly. And
rent to own?
I wonder if layaway is a thing all across the world or just in America. That was definitely a thing when I was a kid, that layaway. But other people, players like Jota and Mason Greenwood, I think are trickier, right? Because not just because they've been disappointing, but also because they both have really good fixtures in game week 6, which made the question, I think, even harder. So, but let's start things off with Ronaldo and Lukaku. Okay. Now, of course, they're buys in a big picture sense, right? I'm not going to talk about whether you should have these two players in fantasy, but I have a couple questions about them. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the first one is about Ronaldo, which is that, and you don't own him. And I guess, here's my first question to you.
Sure.
How do you feel about not having Ronaldo? And do you just think you're going to kind of go without him indefinitely now?
Do you remember we had that conversation a couple weeks ago about, quote, winning Saturday? We dodged Salah captaincy? Like we didn't have Salah
home to Burnley. Yeah.
Yeah. And he blanked and we felt like we got away with something. And we talked about how that was a not often talked about as fun fantasy experience. Mm-hmm. Certainly it's fun when it goes your way.
Yeah.
I have never to this extreme felt so agonized watching a player than watching Ronaldo play West Ham on Sunday. It was excruciating. I was like in knots, and knowing the level of his ownership was one thing. Yeah. And it should, my anxiety should have been lessened because I knew that he wasn't so heavily captained because most of the managers like in the top bands were on Salah this week. But it was the longest 90 minutes of a fantasy season that I can remember for a long time. So
and you had Greenwood and Bruno and Shaw. So like in theory, that's a fun match for you, right? You've got three players.
No, I didn't have Bruno. I actually had four players in that match, and then I had Greenwood, Shaw, Benrahma, and Soufal. So I had four players going up against Ronaldo, and I still had, I still felt like it was me against the world. Now, I came out ahead, and let me be clear, like I felt like a six-pointer for Ronaldo was a massive sigh of relief. I was yelling at the TV at West Ham, like, hold West Ham, hold.
Yeah.
And for each like successive penalty shout from Ronaldo, my butt got clenched more and more and more. So if the question is, how am I feeling as a non-Ronaldo owner? I feel exhausted, Josh. I feel totally and utterly exhausted.
Yeah. I mean, this is why one of the reasons I got him, because I don't want to play. I don't want to like do it. You know, I don't want to play that game. Like, I don't want to. And also, like, I mean, because exactly. I in that match, I had Ronaldo and that was it. Actually, I didn't have any West Ham players after my wild card. And I didn't have anyone else in Man United. And so it was just Ronaldo. So I like, but he was the one, his effective ownership in my kind of bracket order was like 101%. Right. So it was like, just like, whatever, you know, mm-hmm. It was kind of like, didn't really matter what he did. It was not going to like affect my rank at all, but that's what I wanted. That's really one of the reasons I brought in Ronaldo, is because I don't want the stress that you were just talking about. I just don't want to deal with it. And so to me, you know, the question that I have with him is, are we really going to sell him before, you know, for Lukaku, before game week 7, you know, is this hokey pokey strategy, or hokey pokey, as we say in the US. I always have to add that, Brandon. The hokey pokey strategy really going to work? I don't think so. And when I went back and forth on my wild card, I ultimately decided that I may just not have Lukaku, just not at all. And that just might be my reality. What do you think about that? Just going without Lukaku, you know, at all?
Well, it's, if we just look at game week 5 and these two matches on Sunday, and I was stressed, like, the Ronaldo conversation is just not about ownership. It is about Ronaldo's effectiveness on the pitch.
Yeah.
And watching him versus Lukaku on Sunday, Ronaldo had, I think it was 8 shots in the box, zillion touches. He just looks so effective, and the points are going to come raining down based on current evidence. With Lukaku, you know, as you said at the start, we're not going to advocate for not having Lukaku, because clearly he's very good. But when you're comparing the two based on the last two game weeks, the points are going to be slightly harder for Lukaku to come by. Lukaku will get them, but like looking
Timo
at the
Werner's going to mess it up for him, right?
I mean, I will say Kai Havertz looked worse than Timo Werner today, with twice, 3 times as many minutes. And I thought it was incredible how Thomas Tuchel made that one tiny midfield switch at halftime, and suddenly Spurs could not touch the ball in the second half of that match. There's no doubt that Chelsea is going to steamroll opponents, but the question that we're asking here is, what is Lukaku's involvement? A concerning thing for Lukaku owners is how often Lukaku was looking to pass against Spurs, and it was virtually every time. He was doing the Olivier Giroud, where he had his back to goal a little too much for my taste.
Only one player can be a selfish points goblin, Brandon, in FPL each season. I mean, Mo Salah is darn close, but I think you've got to give Ronaldo, just the way he was. I mean, you know, the histrionics, I don't love them, but they're more tolerable when he's in your fantasy team. You know, it's a little easier to put up with the screaming at the ref, screaming for the ball, screaming for a pen.
Like,
not my favorite thing. Just screaming.
Just regular primal screams. I will say, I will make a case for the hokey cokey.
Okay.
I do think this was the thought that I had initially had when all these premium players started flooding the marketplace. Lukaku and Ronaldo, when they signed to the league, I thought, well, no one's going to be able to have everybody.
Yep.
And if you can get these mid-price marginal players right.
Yep.
And my current plan right now is to bring Ronaldo in for Lukaku going into game week 6, because I think Manchester United at Old Trafford could pick Aston Villa to pieces in game week 6. And I will have no problem. Now, player value with these guys is going to fluctuate wildly. And
it'll cost you some point ones.
It will probably go up and rarely go down. But I think when I have played at my best in fantasy, it has been without fear of shifting, doing the late riser upside chasing of without fear shifting from one premium to another. So I think that were making a case for Ronaldo today, I think that you can definitely strategically shift to Lukaku in a game week that looks promising.
Yeah, it's hard to have both. It really is. It feels like you're going to have to pick, or you're going to have to do the moving back and forth. I mean, it's just tricky because, I mean, I guess just to go back to my original point, it's going to be hard. Like, once you make that move, do you really think you're going to just move him right back? And I mean, I think at this point, game week 7, which is Man United plays Everton at home and Chelsea plays Southampton at home. At this point, I think I'd rather have Ronaldo than Lukaku for that one, right? Southampton does not seem like the 11 goal whipping boys that they were last season, right? They've kept West Ham and Man City to clean sheets in their last two matches. I mean, you have to be impressed with how they're performing so far this season defensively.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think the way that Hasenhüttl sets that team up is you never know which week is going to be the week where, you know, it all just comes crashing down. But yep. I agree. Manchester United is just becoming, it's less of an in real life team. They are actually a fantasy team. Yeah. It is all of these disparate, like, fantasy attacking darlings from yep. Greenwood to Bruno to Ronaldo now. And I think the way they're going to play week in, week out is to score goals. Yep. And that is so appealing. And Chelsea, like I was saying about Tuchel masterminding the Spurs match, Chelsea are going to be more methodical about how they get their wins. And if it's going to have to be a 1-0 win, so be it. Yep. Manchester United is they're just going to try and Harlem Globetrot their way through the season. Yeah. And from a fantasy point of view, I want to be a part of that as of right now.
It's really interesting. I mean, I you have to think Chelsea's going to win the league, right? I mean, I honestly feel like they have to be the favorites at this point, just because that defense is so, they've conceded 0 goals from open play through 5 matches.
Yeah.
You know, one pen through on a dodgy,
sure,
handball call.
And even Kepa was in goal on Sunday. So, you know, if they're keeping clean sheets, even with Kepa, what's going to stop them?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I think you're right. I think so when I look at it, you look at game week 6, I think it's fine to go Ronaldo over Lukaku. Just, you know, obviously Man City are tough, very, very strong defensively as well, outside of Kyle Walker sitting on players. Game week 7, I think Everton, Southampton, that to me is let's just call it a wash. Right. And then game week 8, you've got Chelsea away to Brentford, Man United away to Leicester. I think from what we've seen from Leicester so far this season, this is not the Leicester team of the last couple of years. I don't know. It's like they're in need of a refresh or something. I don't really know what's wrong with them right now. But
they stink.
They kind of stink right now. It's weird. And Chelsea away to Brentford. I feel like that one you could get away with too. And then, so game week 9 is the one where Man United play Liverpool at home, Chelsea play Norwich at home. And so I think a hokey-cokey in a limited hokey-cokey, because they play Norwich at home, then Newcastle away, and Burnley at home in game weeks 9, 10, 11. So if you're going to drop Ronaldo for a short time, and during that span, Man United play Liverpool, Spurs, and Man City, right, in those 3 matches. So I think that if you were going to do it, I think you're kind of fine for 6, 7, and 8, and I would focus on 9, 10, and 11. And that's actually after an international break. So we really do have, like, in my opinion, you can basically wait until like November or late October before you really have to start stressing out about what you're going to do with Ronaldo if you've got him on your team and how to, because you know, I mean, I just have a lot of experience. I spent hours like figuring out whether I wanted to do a Lukaku and Ronaldo team. And in my opinion, you just sacrifice too many things. It's really hard to have 2 Chelsea defenders, which I think might be more important than having Lukaku. It's really hard to have Antonio, you know, if you set up your team that way. And Antonio is captainable, in my opinion, away to Leeds. You can't really have any Leeds players for that matter, right? I mean, maybe this is less relevant now after what we've seen from them, but I certainly expect them to score. I mean, look at their run ahead, right? Like, you know, fixtures are incredibly important in fantasy, and they play West Ham, Watford, Southampton, Wolves, Norwich in the next 5, right? Those are matches where you would expect Leeds to get a couple of goals and practically all of them. And so it was just it's just very hard to have a balanced squad with both of them in your team. And so I know that some people have done it. I just don't really like, I did not like the way my team looked when I did it. And I feel like I'm kind of immediately validated in the sense that a team that I would have put together for this game week with those two would have scored fewer points than the team that I put together. Right. So I think that's of course probably not going to be true as we move forward, maybe game weeks 9, 10, 11. But I think for the next 3 weeks, I would just have Ronaldo. I would not worry as much about Lukaku and then reconsider it game week 9. I don't know if you have anything else you want to throw on there.
Just a little nerdy point. If you go to the FPL page with terms and conditions, read through all the legalese, those little asterisks that says limited hokey cokey, results may vary. So I right. felt like they were very, it was very important for them to call that out just to cover themselves for all of yep. us angry managers.
All right. So that's our Ronaldo Lukaku section for today's pod. I feel like this is going to be a recurring theme on most of our pods going forward, but we'll table it for there for now. Let's keep talking about forwards for a minute. Antonio, if you don't have him like I do, is straight back. Okay. Straight back in just seems like a good piece of strategy, but what about for a hit? Would you bring in Antonio for a hit ahead of game week 6?
Well, I guess if I draw upon my Ivan Toney experience in game week 5, I think you have to also then consider what are you getting rid of. And if you're getting rid of actual dead weight, somebody who's not playing, yeah, but there's just so many attacking players in the game right now where you can justifiably believe that they will deliver. So if you take a -4 to get Antonio in against Leeds, what are you asking Antonio to do just in that Leeds fixture? I think a hit for Antonio only works if you are ready to have Antonio bring those points to you over the course of multiple game weeks, not just one. So if you can't do Antonio back without a hit, then I might suggest you wait a week because whoever is your place filler, I mean, Watford were entirely capable against Norwich. I mean, I think Watford, mm-hmm. we're going to see them do yep. okay against good fixtures and look yep. like absolute garbage against the tougher fixtures. I think if you've got Dennis up front, I would keep him for one more week instead of a -4 for Antonio. And that is caveated, of course, with the fact that I think Antonio will do quite well against Leeds.
Yeah, I mean, Watford played Newcastle at home. Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very fair point. It really just depends on what your team looks like. I mean, I think who would you have that you would? I guess it just sort of depends. Like, I wouldn't move Bamford. Obviously, that'd be way too lateral. I would move Danny Ings mm-hmm. to Antonio for a hit. If that was what it took to bring in Antonio. I mean, I realize that Ings is more than Antonio, but like if you had like another problem to fix and then you were like, oh, what should I do with Ings? I think I would just make that move. I would just drop Ings and I would bring in Antonio.
You may be the only fantasy manager in this situation, Josh. So tell me what you're going to do. Gabriel Jesus.
He's out. It's already done. I mean, it's not literally done because I want to wait until the League Cup matches have been played. But that is my move this week. If price changes mean I have to do it sooner, then I'll do it sooner. But that was always the plan.
You needed to do a hit to turn Jesus into Antonio?
I think I would. Yeah. I how does Antonio not score? I mean, one goal is a guarantee. I feel like he should be 100% bookies odds to score this weekend. I think that he could score multiple goals. And I think that he is, I mean, I just think he's going to be, have a great day. And I really genuinely think he's captainable. I think it's, you know, when you get into like the effective ownership thing, and I mean, it's actually a really interesting week for that. I was going to talk about captaincy later, but yeah, you know, let's do that. Let's talk about captaincy
later.
Teaser. Yeah, exactly. Otherwise we're just going to get so far off the rails, you know, we're not going to be able to get back on. So, yeah, but I feel really good about Antonio. I think he's worth bringing in for a hit. Like if you're, let's see what happens with Rafinha, for example, right? Like you may have to fix that problem. But I would rather, okay, let me put it this way. I would rather bring in like a bench defender or bench midfielder to replace Rafinha if he's only out for a little while. In other words, just like have somebody coming off my bench, then I would not solve the Antonio in mm-hmm. issue because I really think he's going to be a great fantasy asset this weekend. Jimenez, Brent, I'll give this one to you. Tom says, should the Rabona, in quotation marks, mark the end of the line for us Jimenez? I don't know if you saw him Rabona his way off the pitch yesterday.
It was incredible. it was just what a series of unfortunate events for Jimenez.
Seems like a great guy.
Sure. To put that positive spin on it, we all love Raul. He's one of the most fun players, strikers to watch in the league for the last few seasons. And it's incredible to see him come back from that horrible head injury.
Yep.
We all are rooting for you, Raul, but on current evidence, he is so far off the pace. And it was also terrifying then when he missed that header and throws his headband down. And now suddenly I'm fearing for his safety, both physically and mentally.
So tough, right? Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
I was just going to say my grandmother, may she rest in peace, was on an insulin pump for decades. And at the end of her life, we knew that she was ready to give up when she discarded the insulin pump. She's like, I'm done with it. Lord, take me away. So I hope Jimenez is just.
I hope he lives to see game week six.
Yeah, I do too. But I think if you own Jimenez, the alarm bell should be sounding. And it's like, okay, you've got multiple problems here. Jimenez looks well off the pace and no real signs of it happening for him. And then you've got the whole team around him.
They don't have a midfield.
Yeah, no. Well, sure. They just don't really have much of anything. Adama Traore, the crosses were beyond comical this weekend against Brentford. He's just launching them out of the stadium. And I think the Wolves fans just were getting sick and tired of it too. So Wolves is a bit toxic at the moment.
Yeah, I mean,
is that overstating it?
Well, I mean, I think defensively, I think they may have just had a bad day. I think that, Marcel may be out now, which is, I think, a worry that some people had. And he had quite a poor match off, I think, in the 60th minute or something
The tackles on Ivan Toney were just box office, right?
Exactly. It was a bad tackle. I mean, it wasn't quite as bad as what Kyle Walker did, but it was pretty bad. It was just a weird, he was totally out. The whole team was off the boil, and I'm not quite sure why. Maybe a little calm down after finally getting their first win of the season or something.
I'll quickly say this for anyone who's looking for Brentford insight. The fact that Marcel was marking Ivan Toney, you're like, why? He's at least a foot shorter than Tony. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, right, because the rest of the Brentford team are also trees.
Yeah.
And there are only so many tall people on Wolves. And Brentford, save this conversation for another day, but I think they're an interesting team from that respect.
You know, I have to say our preseason team predictions, Brennan, are doing pretty well at the moment. You know, we felt pretty good about Brentford, and we had Brighton pretty high too, and Brighton, Brennan, it looks like they're going to make the Champions League.
Incredible
based on current evidence.
So, the Seagulls are crossing the channel.
They're low key doing incredibly well.
Yep.
Right, 12 points from 15. We haven't really talked about it much on the pod because they're not a great fantasy team, but all credit to them for doing so well.
Sure, it's a case study in sticking with a manager and a philosophy through thick and thin. I mean, Potter had a tough couple of seasons there, and suddenly you put in enough effort and it can click.
That's why you're such an OGS fan, right? Stick with the plan. Right?
Only at the wheel, what could go wrong? Yeah. I was pissed off when Fulham and Scotty Parker couldn't reach an agreement because I thought, listen, this is what clubs who are kind of in this middle range, they need consistency.
Yeah,
and again, you look at Brighton and you see how it can work for the best.
Yeah. That's why I feel a little bad for Norwich. I mean, and how tough their start was to the season because they did that, right? They stuck with Daniel Farke and had a great year in the championship. Yeah. And
you notice, Josh, bad. I said you have to have a philosophy and a manager. I don't know that Norwich has any kind of philosophy happening.
Right. That's fair. Although they were a great passing team. And I remember when we did our previews, their passing stats were fantastic last year. And I think, right. you know, now granted they had Buendia, which I think is, they had a player who was, you know, who was a Premier League caliber player, and they, you know, they let him go. I mean, they didn't let him go. They sold him for a lot of money. And so, yeah, I think that's really the problem right now. So anyway, I mean, the one team that, and again, not to get too off topic here, but the Leeds is the one team that, I just can't believe, you know, they're 17th place right now. And I'm thinking the fixtures are going to turn things around for them, but the injuries are bad. Like they have no center backs anymore. It's kind of crazy.
No center backs. And you see it all through their spine. I mean, this is what Liverpool went through last season. If you have too many center back injuries, suddenly you've got Calvin Phillips playing center back, and that totally diminishes the effectiveness of the Leeds midfield, which then diminishes the effect of the attack, et cetera, et cetera. So Leeds will pull through this. It's just kind of a matter of how long is it going to take.
Feels like they need to pull somebody there's gotta be some free agent center back out there, right? Some 39-year-old Duffy type, right? It's just looking for a job, didn't Crystal Palace let nine center backs go in the offseason? Just bring in Scott Dann or something for a couple matches.
We need some real Tompkins energy.
Yeah, they just need somebody to head the ball away sometimes, you know, just because I don't know if anybody could do that right now. All right. So anyway, let's move on to the midfielders. The big one here is Jota, obviously. What do we buy a sell hole with Jota? Dave says, when do we jump off Jota, seeing as it doesn't matter if he plays or not? The points are the same.
Yeah.
Wow. It was my first game we go in Jota this season. So I now I'm in. It's a wild feeling. Tell me how you're feeling.
Well, I think I'd like to discuss Jota along with Mason Greenwood in particular, because I think you've got two very similarly priced attacking midfielders and you've got two different problems. One, Mason Greenwood, who started off the season really well because he was effectively the number nine and he was the team was reliant upon his goals. And now with the introduction of Ronaldo, the shape of the team has completely changed as far as Mason Greenwood is concerned. Yeah. For Jota, that is not the case. And if people are feeling really burned by Jota for the past two game weeks. Now, if you look at them in isolation, last game week, it wasn't Jota's fault. He created multiple chances for Sadio Mane. He actually had a pretty good game. Yep. No points came. And then you kind of forget that he played really well but just didn't have any points because in game week five, he misses one of the all-time sitters. Yeah. And, you know, the fantasy community explodes in absolute grief. And I think
hard not to. Yeah.
Yeah. It was, listen, I'm a Jota owner. That sucked. It was really disappointing. But I think most players, you've got to give them one of those. That's going to happen. I mean, how many sitters have all these players missed? So at least with Jota, I think Jota is a hold for this reason, because Jota still plays in a system that suits him and suits him for fantasy points. Then you've got Mason Greenwood, where I think he is a sell, because what we are now seeing from him is that he is being pushed away from fantasy results.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bummer for him. I mean, really, I mean, you know what? It's honestly fine, I think. And we'll be okay for him, because it's a little bit like Phil Foden at Man City, where if you're good enough, I mean, Ronaldo, warps things a little bit, because there's kind of a feeling that maybe he's more powerful than OGS in that squad now, you know, and that might,
I think that's a matter of fact.
Josh. That may just be a matter of fact. Yeah. So there's, you know, because of that, it worries me a little bit that that Ronaldo could go on a string of bad form and still just be undroppable at any point. But yeah, I think that it was great. I mean, you know, I had Greenwood the first 4 weeks of the season and it was great. I got a technical turns in all four of those matches. And the one that I got in game week four was a lucky one. You know, it was a little ball to Woodman, you know, that he just kind of gave to Ronaldo as a present, as we talked about already. Yeah.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. Here's a goal. I think you saw today. It's just, he's not as, you're right, because Jota is still effectively Liverpool's forward. Right. So you would expect more chances to come just for that. Mason Greenwood is now I don't know, like competing with Jadon Sancho and Marcus Rashford for one of the wing spots. It's tricky. And I thought the Bruno Ronaldo combination was pretty good. I felt like it was better today than like at any point in any of the Portugal matches that I've watched. So
I agree. And even Bruno was drifting into the number nine spot, playing far forward. And it was really the Bruno and Ronaldo show, and everybody else was quite peripheral. I mean, Luke Shaw still getting his tushy.
We'll talk about him later.
But yeah, I mean, I guess like, since we're talking about it, I mean, it was a little peculiar with Ronaldo so quickly going for the penalty shout. Like, that is often the hallmark of a striker who is lacking in confidence, where they're like, I don't have the energy to actually make this shot, so
real
I'm going to force
Ashley Barnes, real Ashley Barnes kind of move.
But even that said, just the sheer volume of opportunities Ronaldo was getting cannot be quibbled with. So anyway, I think Greenwood is a buy, and Bruno, if you're still holding Bruno, I think this is where you're going with that, Josh. I think Bruno feels like a hold still.
I think Bruno feels like a hold still too. I mean, I think it's tricky because, I mean, if you have Bruno and Ronaldo, for example, I mean, Bruno and it's a little easier. I don't know. I guess we're only talking about a 0.5 million difference, but maybe there's like a slot consideration too. Is it easier to have Lukaku and Bruno than it is to have Ronaldo and Lukaku? I'm not totally sure about that. It may be a question we have to answer when Man United's fixtures get really good. I think it's like around game week 15 or so. But I think that Bruno looked pretty good. I think that if I was on a wild card, I would definitely have Ronaldo over Bruno, just because Ronaldo seems to get, he just gets goals so easily. It's just so, you know, it's just, he's just such a natural goal scorer. It's kind of extraordinary. I mean, it's just interesting because, like, of course I'd watched a million, you know, especially in the Champions League, like elimination rounds, like a ton of, you know, Real Madrid matches. And I didn't watch a ton of him at Juve. Like, just, I don't know, like Italian football just doesn't really like pop up a lot in the US. Like, right. Like, I feel like La Liga, you can pretty much see it anywhere. If you're at an American soccer bar, like, they're going to put on any big La Liga match.
I think Serie A just got a broadcasting deal with CBS. I think they're on the Paramount Plus app, but I think that deal was probably like put in motion when they thought they could sell Ronaldo to American viewers. Ronaldo plus
and Weston, Lukaku
and Ronaldo, Lukaku and Weston McKinney for all the American homers out there. And now, the league has been depleted of most of its stars. It's just Jose Mourinho and Edin Dzeko now.
It's wild. Yeah. But I kind of like it. I mean, we are like just doing some real tangents today, but I mean, a life dream for me is certainly to go see match one of the major Italian stadiums. But anyway,
you've always wanted to see a match where there is a huge running track between you and the field.
Maybe I don't want to. What Stadio Olimpico, is that the one? Is that where the where Roma play?
In my head, it's just like every single one of these places has a racing track, but obviously that's not true.
I think, I mean, with Jota, it looks like Firmino is still going to be out, and they play Brentford in game week 6. I know Brentford have looked pretty strong defensively, but still, I'm not going to, this is just like a basic rule of thumb. Like, don't drop a player in your fantasy team before they play a promoted team, because promoted teams can look good sometimes, but they're pretty mercurial, right? I mean, Watford lost at home to Wolves and then looked like a 10th place level team when they played Norwich yesterday. Like, they knocked Norwich off the pitch on the road. Like, they looked phenomenal, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, but you just never quite know what you're going to get with a promoted team. And so I think with Jota's case, total hold. I think I'm with you on Greenwood. That's a sell, or maybe a hold for one more week, just because they do play this home match, and Man United have been pretty strong at home so far this season. He does not feel like the biggest problem for someone to fix in their team.
Possibly. I will just raise my finger and say, I wonder about rotation risk with Greenwood now, because Ole does have the options, as you mentioned, and it wasn't totally working with Greenwood on the pitch. And then you look at Lingard and Sancho coming on and securing the victory for United. Yeah. So we'll see. That is a concern that I have as a Greenwood owner.
Lingard scoring the game-winning goal, doing West Ham dirty. That was
that guy. Like that guy just wants the world to not like him. Is my general feeling there?
All right. So yeah, and I think yeah, Bruno kind of the same rationale as Jota, I suppose, which is just, you know, good fixture, hold for now. We have the League Cup, so I think, you know, like you said, Mason Greenwood plays 90 minutes in the League Cup, especially if he doesn't look great, then it's a hold. But again, it's a little bit like you and I were talking a couple days ago about whether you wanted to move Benrahma to Rafinha before game week 5 because they had this good fixture, and we ultimately were just like, it's too much of a lateral move.
Yeah.
And all, you know, in the end, you know, a deflected goal or not, like you know Benrahma still outscored Rafinha by 2 points on the day, so you have to really think about whether it's really worth wasting a precious transfer on sometimes. And I don't see any of those three players as being in that category in the very short term. I think long term, Greenwood out has to happen. And honestly, Jota out for me probably too. I think, you know, I was really thinking about Jota to Mason Mount, but now I'm sort of rethinking that after Mount's horrific day. I might try to go up to Kai Havertz. I know he didn't have a good day today, but it seems like Kai Havertz is considered a pretty key cog in that Chelsea attack. So he might be somebody worth owning. I don't know.
And when the dull American commentary even raises questions over Mason Mount's form, then you know that there is a problem. And
yeah.
To further Americanize the conversation, that Spurs match was just crying out for Christian Pulisic. I think that when Havertz is not performing and Mount is not performing, to have that additional option as somebody who can just carry that ball into the final third was missing. But Mason Mount... yeah, he's not really fully produced the goods. Like, he's always been an under-the-radar FPL performer, but he's so far under the radar, he's like a stealth bomber without any bombs loaded in him, I guess,
to
really force the metaphor here.
Yeah, it feels like with someone like Havertz, Havertz is obviously not he's like a watch. He's not even on the – all the Chelsea midfielders are kind of in that stealth bomber mode right now. Like, just keep him on the old watch list.
Yeah.
All right, so Sarr had a great game. You know, the note that I have here is he the best Rafinha replacement if Rafinha is injured? So, again, Sarr available for $6 million. They've got a nice run coming up here as well. Let's see. They play Newcastle at home, Leeds away. Great, great fixtures. Liverpool, which is not a great one, although the last time they played Liverpool at home when they were in the league, Sarr had an amazing match. He had a brace in that
match. Sure did.
So, and then away to Everton, home to Southampton. So pretty decent run, all things considered. But, I mean, Newcastle and Leeds are probably the two teams you most want to play right now in fantasy. So I think, you know, if you look at form and fixtures, it feels like he's a pretty appealing prospect.
Newcastle and Leeds, sure, but I think the most important team you want to play is Norwich, who Sarr just played, where he scored his brace, and it's what you were saying about promoted teams and their mercurial nature.
Right.
That's the hard thing to surmise with Sarr is how confident. Now, so this is a situation I'm in going into game week 6 where I feel like I have a midfield, an option to change midfield with a free transfer. As I have established, I have some concerns about Greenwood, even his starting place going into game week 6. So who would be the replacement? And you've got Sarr is the star man coming out of game week 5 that fits that mold. But then if you look at the fixtures,
the star man with two R's at the end,
he's the Sarr man. I think you are, I'm tempted to target Norwich. Now, Everton is an equally odd team because we've seen their many faces. It's just, for all these really incredible teams at the top of the table, from Chelsea United to City and Liverpool, you've got some teams that I just cannot make heads or tails of. Like Leicester and Everton, Leeds and the like, Southampton even. They're harder and harder to predict. So basically, I think Sarr feels like a good player when you're targeting particular fixtures. And you know, you've pointed out fixtures coming up that are good to target. But if you're looking to move on a midfield going into game week 6, like I still don't know how you can avoid the Everton midfield, because I think they'll be ready to blow Norwich out of the water.
Well, yeah. I mean, if it, do they have a forward? I mean, they didn't have, you know, I mean, I was feeling pretty good about having Damari Gray. And then it was like, well, now I guess it's like Damari Gray and like a bunch of like backups were trying to score a goal, you know, in that match. And so it sort of depends.
I mean, so like you replaced Richarlison, who had a pretty miserable match in game week four, while everybody around him was excelling. You replace Richarlison with Rondon. Like, well, what's so different about that? I mean, Rondon isn't as mobile.
I didn't think Rondon played very well. I mean, honestly, and
that's what I'm saying, where I don't think Richarlison played very well either in game week four.
Yeah, but Richarlison is a good player. Like, I rate Richarlison. Like, I mean, I think he's annoying and, like, you know, and I think he should honestly score more goals than he does. But I do think that Richarlison's a good player. And, you know, he's capable of scoring a goal. And I mean, I just felt like, I mean, and again, like, this is like born from like my own experience on Saturday watching these two teams play, where I just didn't understand how Everton could possibly score a goal in that match. Like, I didn't know like how it could have happened. Like, there was no combination of players that I mean, you just had, you know, the kind of classic thing where like once Andros Townsend scores one of his like annual worldies, it just means like that's all he tries to do now for like the next like four or five matches, is just like run around the pitch and just shoot from anywhere.
I've been talking with the manager about how I should try to score more goals. Like, okay, slow your roll there, Andros. Yeah. I don't know if the tongue might have been in cheek when that conversation was happening.
Yeah, if anything, I wonder if Decore might be. I mean, I thought Gray played okay. I mean, Decore is so he's such a good player. Like, he's just, yeah. I mean, maybe he's not the best fantasy asset in general, but I thought he played really well. And I don't know. So I think we just have to wait and see. I mean, it looks like, so say Dominic Calvert-Lewin's back in October. Richarlison is back. Richarlison's back even later. So they really aren't going to have any forwards for this match. So that to me feels like a problem. I don't know. I think I'm not sure that I would. It just feels risky to me to have an Everton midfielder now because of that.
So. Well, so my final verdict on Sarr is going to be a hold, and okay. I'm reserving judgment on the buy. Obviously, you're not going to sell him.
Right. Obviously. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm hoping to get a couple price hits price rises this week. He should rise 15 points from a 6 million midfielder. Yeah.
That's... Just sprinkle a little active yeast on that man.
All right, who else do we have here? So talk about Mount, Sarr, Benrahma. Okay, but this is our last midfielder, okay? Bolino Stu says, a few people we thought were on the way out have returned this week. Benrahma is one example. Should we stick with them because they did okay, you know, acknowledging the deflection, or stick to our gut and move on? So you've got, Benrahma in your squad. What are you planning to do?
I'm holding that guy. Listen, I don't. West Ham are good. West Ham are a good team.
Yeah, yeah. They play Leeds too. Yeah.
I really should have asked you to redraft our bottom of the table preseason predictions because we put them down there. But
we had them like 11th. But it should have been higher though. I agree.
I mean, I'm like swiftly revising my historical opinion on David Moyes. It's just like, I don't think it really can be overstated what he's done with that club over the last couple of seasons. And I think they're great. I think they're especially great in the attack. I think Benrahma is a definite hold. Per earlier conversation, the priority going into game week six is Antonio. So I guess that is that limits your ability to buy on Benrahma right now. But I think this guy still has a lot of FPL value to generate.
Yeah, and a couple of good fixtures too. Really nice start for West Ham in general, right? Especially once you look past this that Man United match that was just played today. I think he probably falls into the buy category now too. I think if you dropped him on a wild card, I think you'd consider bringing him back in.
Just watching them, it just blew me away against Manchester United. I mean, it's funny because everyone says this is the player that Manchester United desperately needs, but Declan Rice is such a good player for the job that he does. And like, if anything were to happen to Declan Rice, then maybe West Ham needs to be a stay away. But what he unlocks, the potential of the West Ham attack that he unlocks is great. So I have great confidence going into game week six and seven.
I like the way Zuma was like talking to all his teammates and stuff a lot too. It feels like he's really all in on being there, which is kind of cool. It doesn't feel like he like went there for a paycheck or whatever, you know. It feels like he's and yeah, I mean, and he's obviously, he is a good player too. And so I think that it's, yeah, I felt pretty bad that Noble Penn. I mean, this, it was so reminiscent of when Vardy came on to take a pen at a Spurs match. Remember this, like 2 or 3 years ago? It was like, I think it was like James Maddison. There was a penalty for for Leicester. And Maddison was standing over the ball, and then they subbed in Jamie Vardy, and his first kick of the game was a penalty, and it got saved. It was kind of exactly the same thing as what happened with Mark Noble today. And it's like, you just, like, it was exactly what happened with the England national team this summer, right? Like, don't let people's first touch be a penalty. Like, that does not seem like,
just don't overthink it. Just do not overthink it. It's a pen. And like, a Mark Noble, just score the pen. Come on. Like, you're a professional, but also is, but, the manager shouldn't overthink it.
Yeah.
Just let the warm players take it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I have a lot of sympathy for Mark Noble there. Cause I do think that's a tough spot. I mean, we're not talking about a quiet, like, training ground moment there, right? It's like kind of everybody's screaming. It's a kind of controversial call. You know, there's a lot of drama. Like, it's a lot to walk into right there. For the first touch of the ball to be a penalty kick, like, to hit it as hard as you can away from the keeper. Like, it's,
you're just
not
breathing
easy.
In the cologne that Cristiano Ronaldo has been bathing in all morning.
That's gonna knock you back a little. You're not gonna be like totally off. You're not gonna put all the leather on. You know, get all the leather of the ball. All right, so let's move on just quickly here, because we're going a little long in this section, to the defenders. And very quickly on Shaw. My feeling on Shaw is you can hold him for one more week. That seems fine. And then get rid of him. Drop him. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't really have much to say about Luke Shaw. I have had him since game week one, and it's not been fun. But
he gets in the mix. I mean,
there is, something's bubbling up. Something certainly will at some point bubble up to the surface. He doesn't feel like a priority. Luke Shaw very well could hang on to my team until I play my wild card. Yeah. And I'll tell you, like, as soon as I wild card, he's gone.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, it's fine for like the short term, but long term, I mean, it's not even so much his, it's like the thing, you just forget that, like, Man United have decided not to really, I mean, they have like one defensive midfielder, right? Like a proper one. I mean, Fred isn't really. And so you've got Matic, who is like the slowest player in the Premier League. He's slower than Robert Huth. You know,
McTominay started alongside Fred in the match, and then Matic came on later. I think most people would say McTominay is the strongest of those those
but
three, but I agree with
genuine defensive mid, right? Yeah, he's like a central midfielder, right?
Right. So there is a limited shield in front of that defense, which is a problem, which I agree with the point you're making.
You see it at times, and there was like moments in that match this morning where I was like, are West Ham up a man? Like, did I miss a red card? So I was like, how are they getting so much of the ball right now? And it just feels like there's no one to kind of sweep it up, you know, like the sweeper role, like you have in high school soccer in the United States. Right?
Sure. Yeah.
You just like sweep that thing away. There's no one doing that.
It's like, there's something about Manchester. God, Manchester United continue to be the most interesting team to talk about, not because anyone likes them. It's just like, they're just so strange. It's
weirdly put together.
But all those players, and especially if you're talking about the lack of discipline in the defense, like, Wan-Bissaka and Luke Shaw are just like often walking around. Like, nobody in that team, like, I think that's why they're so good in the attack, is because they play without fear. They play without any fear of consequences. And that's the problem with the defense, is they're like, well, what's Ole going to do? He's probably going to buy me a piece of pie after the match just so he's concerned that anyone might feel bad.
They really remind me of a baseball team that spent all of their money on like really expensive starting pitchers and like sluggers, you know, and the middle of their lineup, and then just forgot to do anything about their bullpen. and they just kind of hope that like that doesn't become a problem. And it just seems like, and so like, I mean, like clearly they're doing well. They're four losses and one draw to start the season. I mean, you really, like, we probably shouldn't be so critical, but they are conceding a lot of goals, and it just feels like that's going to keep happening. I don't know why you'd walk out of this match thinking that that was not going to keep happening, because they, you know, it just feels like that's going to happen almost every match now. And so,
and I think, for anyone who quibbles with our read on Manchester United, then I'll boil it down for you. The real fantasy issue with Luke Shaw is you should have a Chelsea or Manchester City defender instead.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think, yeah, exactly. Just, which brings us to the next, the next point. I mean, I totally agree with that. And that's why he immediately dropped my wild card for a Chelsea defender. Of course, I picked the wrong one. And my initial draft had, I had Rudiger and James. And then I kind of, it felt like too much. It was kind of like you, like you're talking about this week. It just felt like having two defenders for a road match at Tottenham and then a home match to Man City. It just felt like I didn't need to necessarily do that, because I could just use some money later and move to one of those defenders. But you know, which I mean, it worked out okay. And Ben White picked up 7 points. That was kind of the player I opted for instead. And if Rudiger hadn't scored in the 92nd minute, it would be kind of like a totally neutral move. It wouldn't have made a big difference. You know, in the end, it only cost you 7 points. Like, you can't get too worked up about this stuff. But point being, it's very hard to predict who the Chelsea defenders that you should have in your squad are. If we were to rank them, like, could you and I even have a consensus here? Like, who is the number one Chelsea defender to own? Let's say even like, it's kind of tricky because there's like, there's price, there's stability in the lineup, and there's attacking threat.
Sure.
And I suppose now it seems like Marcus Alonso is insanely enough the one who fits all three of those categories. I can't quite believe it.
I can't remember where I saw it on my Twitter feed, but he was being compared to James Justin of Leicester last season, where, you know, if you didn't have James Justin early on in the season, your argument for not getting him was, oh, look, you know, Ricardo Pereira or whoever was meant to replace him on the wing is almost close to being fully fit. And this is the case mounted against Marcus Alonso, is Chilwell's coming back. Like, don't go there. It's going to be a problem. I think you're still going to have to have a pretty high risk tolerance with Marcus Alonso, but he is clearly like the favored, I guess he's their left back. And he looks so good.
He looks so good. I mean, I guess that's why, right?
Yeah. You've got to put Rudiger A+, number one Chelsea asset, because I keep banging this drum of like the clean sheets are going to be so bankable with Chelsea, and just take the easy points. Don't make it too hard on yourself. It's sort of like subbing Mark Noble on to take a pen at the end of the game. Dude, just get Rudiger. But then again, there is Alonso, who will have those weeks where he could actually score 20 points.
Yeah. I mean, I just kind of, I really thought I was like, I'd figured out the puzzle like with James, you know, and didn't start last weekend. You know, played well in the Champions League match. And I was like, okay, like he's going to, like, he was like one of the first players in my wild card. I felt really good about having him in my squad. And now I'm just like, I don't even know. I mean, the way the team set up today, like with Azpilicueta and the Reece James role, like, do I have to move James immediately? Like, I don't, you know, it's like, I don't even quite know what to do with him right now. So for that reason, I have to rank him below Alonso and Rudiger. I mean, if I wildcarded again, I certainly wouldn't have James. I just don't want the stress of it. And so I guess I would go Alonso, Rudiger, Azpilicueta, and then like James, I would put above Christensen just because James' attacking potential is so high. But I think Christensen is very viable as well. He is only 5 million. He has started 4 of the first 5 matches. And you're just going to have to accept that. I mean, Azpilicueta is like considered a rock in this team. And even he didn't start game week 4, right? So, you know, it's, you're just going to have to accept that, like, you know, and this is why I wasn't like, I was peeved, but I wasn't like stunned or whatever that Reece James didn't play today, because this is like what you're going to get with Tuchel. You're just, sometimes they're not going to start, and that's just kind of how it's going to be. And like, but I think almost all of those, the 5 players that we named, they're probably going to start 4 out of every 5 matches. It's, they don't have that much depth, you know? And so I think that, I don't know. So I feel reasonably good about those picks. I mean, I it's just crazy to me that Reece James has to be so low, but I think he and Christensen are kind of like, maybe I would even say go for Christensen just because he's 0.6 million cheaper and you can use that money elsewhere.
Fair enough. Okay, so do we need to do the same with Manchester City defenders? I think it's just Ruben Diaz. Just get Ruben Diaz if you want to go there. And I think City, it's just like such, it's a fixture thing with City. If you look at what they've got coming up, I cannot find their fixtures here, Josh. Where are they? Are they high, low, somewhere in the middle? Oh, they're way at the bottom because of my point exactly. So Chelsea and Liverpool in the next two. So that's a wild card decision that I think those who have not yet played their wild card look to bring in Diaz, maybe Cancelo, starting in game week 8.
I think that maybe that's like a theme of this week's pod, which with all these buy sell holds is that some of these players are really strong buys, but you probably can wait like 2 more weeks for a lot of them. It feels like that's kind of true across the board in some ways. Like the only players that I would really, really be excited about buying in this whole list is Antonio, really. And and then just one last shout out here. Luke Williams was asking about kind of the ideal starting five, like your ideal five defenders. And the one player I just want to highlight here is Livramento, who feels like that's got to be like the first player on any wild card right now. If you don't have Livramento, just bring him in, man. It's four million, played well. Mm-hmm. Like what else can you say? You know, Southampton actually have some good fixtures coming up where you could really realistically start Livramento for some of them. In fact, I am planning to start Livramento in game week 6 at home to Wolves. It feels like a reasonable starting opportunity for him there.
It sure does. Ice cold, refreshing Livramento. He's great.
Yeah. So let's take one last break and then we're just going to do a quick look ahead to game week 6.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Game Week 6 kicks off on Saturday. You and I will be in the American Southwest. Just two questions I want to ask you, Brandon. One is, what is your transfer decision for this week?
Well, I have two free transfers, so I'm thinking quite seriously about moving Lukaku to Ronaldo because I think United hosting Aston Villa on Saturday is two early kickoffs to City, Chelsea, United, Villa. So I think Ronaldo, and I also want to get rid of Mason Greenwood. So I really do not know who that would be.
Yeah.
And the issue for my squad then is that I continue to have Ivan Toney, and I am not here to say the game has changed on the back of that Wolves match. I don't think it has. I think Toney gave us all a parting gift, and he has my lasting love and affection for that. Yeah. But I think he survives another week, just because I don't think there would be an option for me to move Toney to Bamford. But talk to me about your feelings about Leeds and Bamford going into this match, because they're really ragged, and the players are dropping left and right.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, now Harrison has COVID, right? So that's like another blow right there. So yeah, it's weird. I think the fixtures will save them. I mean, this West Ham match, like you just talked about with West Ham, not the gimme that it maybe looked like a few weeks ago. I mean, you have to kind of favor West Ham to maybe win that match now. And so, which I think, you know, that match was played in last year at this time, I would have definitely favored Leeds to win it, you know? So, and so I think it just depends on where we are with Rafinha. You know, I think that if he's given a clean bill of health, I think that that Greenwood to Rafinha is very much on the table.
Yeah.
You know, he looked great before he came off, apparently with an injury. So,
yeah, I like that move a little bit better than the Decore, Gray, Townsend, Everton midfield, just targeting the one fixture, Everton, Norwich. It so rarely comes off, and Leeds have an extended run of good fixtures. So I'm generally in agreement to find a player like Rafinha with Leeds having more than just one good fixture coming up is better.
Yeah. I don't know why you're not higher on Sarr than I think you should be, but that's okay. We occasionally disagree in this podcast, and I think that's a strength. I mean, it's kind of funny because Sarr and Toney are really getting what you would want from those players at that price, right? I mean, Toney now has what, 2 goals and an assist through the first 5 matches. I mean, that's pretty good for a $6.5 million forward. And I think Sarr now has 3 goals and 1 assist, so equally fantastic, right, for that price bracket. So, and then captains. I think you've got 3 viable captain picks this week. You've got Ronaldo, I suppose Bruno as well, at home to Aston Villa. You have Antonio at Leeds, and you have Salah at Brentford. Yeah. I think all 3 of those are great. Like, I think you could flip a 3-sided coin, Brandon, and whichever way it came down, you'd be okay.
I totally agree. I mean, I think the way the season has gone, home fixtures seem to favor goals. So Ronaldo, home Aston Villa feels great, but Liverpool really kind of don't care where they play at this point. So Salah, I lean Salah is my bus team captain. And then Antonio is my vice captain.
I've got Ronaldo as my captain right now, but I am not committed to it. I mean, I know that's not like, does not make for great podcast content, but the player that I really would like to captain would be Antonio, because I think that would be a lot of fun away to Leeds. But I think the kind of like, just keep it simple, don't overthink it move would be to just have Ronaldo at home to Aston Villa. It's very hard for me, especially, I don't want him to play in the League Cup. I don't think he will. And so, it's just hard for me to see him playing that home match at home to Aston Villa and not scoring a goal. It just feels like... Yeah. You know, and if he's going to score 1, then there's a decent chance he gets 2, right? And it's sort of, so what I'm
why
saying
not
is
three
he's going to score 6
or 5
goals. Yeah, exactly. I just mean like I just think it's just a little bit like the argument for Salah this last week. It's just like there's some matches where you're just like, well, this player is certainly going to score a goal. I just can't imagine them not scoring a goal in this one. And I often think that that's like, in some ways, you can find another player like the Antonio one where you're like, I could see Antonio scoring 4 goals here or whatever. But usually you should just go with the like simple, like there's no way this player doesn't score in this match, because that feeling tends to be true.
I've got an idea for you, Josh. I'm trying to think of sports, I guess wrestling. What are other sports where you play in like a unitard? Where I'm going with this is, how do you make it impossible for a player to take their shirt off? So I think you've got to have a uniform for a Premier League player where their shirt is attached to their shorts. So they like just literally cannot take their shirt off unless they just like the Hulk, just like tear through it. So, you know, just to avoid any sort of yellow card agita in the future. Yeah. Let's make unitards as uniforms a thing.
Salah's so ripped, though. I mean, credit to him. And so for me, my mood.
We love to see it.
Yeah, ooh-wee. I did. I was like, wow. Like, I even showed my wife. I was like, that, right? So, and then my move this week is very simple. I'm bringing in Antonio. I'm bringing it back in. I took the point hit. It was a gamble that didn't work. So what? Move on. We'll deal with it. So thank you for listening to the pod. That's it. We'll be back, with a slightly stranger one this week, but we're really looking forward to it. And I think hopefully it'll be like fun content. It's a long season. So I think having one weird pod a year seems like an acceptable, move.
Ted Lasso got their weird episode out of the way in the second season.
Two of them. Jeepers, creepers. One too many, in my opinion. All right. So thank you for listening. If you want to support the podcast once again, we love it. If you did, go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. We'll be doing another. Oh, yeah. Actually, I think we're going to do a Patreon pod from the road this week, Brent. I think you and I are going to like speaking to a mic at the airport or something, but we're going to do that as well. So keep an eye out for that. Brent, do you want to thank our producer patrons?
Oh, yeah. Big shout outs to our producers, Mike DiPietro, Trevor Ingerson, Chris Howell, Andy Penn, Martin Savage, Brian T, the Big Gaffer, Bob's Coon, Jeff Husby, Ben Grant, James Holland, Dave Wagner, Lodahl, Nick Wright, Jim Payne, Brian Chindler, Jacobson, Travis West, Victor Forberg, Skogang, Paul Herzig, Andy Portlock, Toothless Gibbon, Lindsay Rostel, Anton Markov at FPL Merch, Carrie Swanson, Kieran Screeton, Francis Mann, Chris Carter, Blue Nose Stew, Mikey Uwong, Bruce Kerr, Sam Schauer, Rich Evans, Future Media Group FPL, Ben Sweeney, George Kinney, Shiv Morjaria, Rom Frosk, AJ, Fly You Fools, Jeremy Spiker, Lazaros Yanos, Jesse Halstead, Matthew Becker, Caleb Robbie, Todd Byerly, Alper Paxoy, Martin Ospith, Lee Hickman, Valger, Paulson Kruger, Jazz Binning, Francis Moore, and Managed by Lasso. Never miss an episode of Always Cheating. Rate, review, subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Acast, wherever fine podcasts are found. Follow us wherever fine social media is found, and visit our fine website at alwayscheating.com.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great weekend. Bye.